This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
First, they decided who would be making the cut. Then they made those cuts. But now, JT and Aaron are talking everything from wrestling to pop culture and beyond. Because it's no holds barred. Put your backs to the wall. What will your answer be? Will you run for the door? Will you run out on me like it's hard? It's no holds barred.
Place to Be Nation. You are in the underground battleground where the no holds barred action takes place, something like that. I'm JT, and I'm with Aaron. Aaron, how are you?
I am awesome, jockass.
Yeah. Fucking Brell in this bitch.
You know, Brell is the man we should all inspire. What, I don't know. We should all aspire. Expect to turn into when we're older.
Yes, aspire. Well, Brell, Brell is like the businessman to end all businessmen. He's handsome, he's strong, competent, makes a lot of money.
Do you think when Vince and Hogan wrote the script in that hotel room, Vince viewed Brell as the good guy?
Oh, for sure. He just viewed him as himself, or as
or
what's his name? It's either him or Dick Ebersol is what he viewed him as, I'm guessing. But he, it's funny because then I think when they put together Wayne's World, they watched that and said, hey, you know what? This Brell guy, he's a TV exec. We're going to put him in this movie in the same exact role.
Only this time, he's going to turn good and be part of Wayne's World's crew.
Yes. Anyway, so hi. We're no longer making cuts, Aaron and I, because that's done. We did a full year of that. But we wanted to keep talking to each other, and this is like the worst intro to a new podcast ever. But you know what? It's not really a new podcast, and we're going to pride ourselves on that, even though it's labeled episode number one. Because I feel like people are going to look at this and say, oh, this asshole is doing another fucking new podcast. But it's not really, because Aaron and I have been doing audio together for a year now. It just was all over the place with our titles and all part of the one project. But now, with that project done, we wanted to keep chatting. And here we are with this show called No Holds Barred. It's a movie we both love, a time period we both love. And the way we wanted to do it was actually kind of branch out beyond just wrestling on the show, right? Is that accurate?
Yeah, like Place to Be Nation is a site that – Place to Be Nation is a site that caters not only to wrestling fans, hopefully, but to pop culture enthusiasts of all different backgrounds. So we wanted to kind of touch on a bunch of different things and really, really show how ignorant we are on a multitude of topics.
Correct. Beyond just wrestling. So we're going to be talking some wrestling. We're going to be talking some TV, maybe some comics, I think. Maybe sports if we can find somewhere that we cross-pollinate. We'll see. Life, day-to-day. So we'll be covering all kinds of topics. And we're going to do it – if you remember Dangerous Alliance and Clotheslines and Headlines and those shows of days gone by – kind of in a similar format. We're going to have multiple segments with some breaks mixed in, and we're going to try and keep ourselves on time. Because, as you know, as we've proven in the GWWE Projects podcast, that we tend to ramble. So already we're probably past our scheduled time for the open. But,
yes,
Aaron.
You've ruined it.
I have. I pissed all over it. Since our show's called No Holds Barred, I thought it would be fun to start off every episode with something that happened in our lives on this current day that could be considered like a no holds barred event. How's that sound?
I love it. I love it. But I want you to tee us off with it though.
Okay. I'm going to go first. So my no holds barred encounter occurred around noon today. I had just returned from work after like 3 days off, and I was kind of really fighting to catch up, a lot going on. And I get a call from my wife, and I tell her when I'm at work, call my cell phone if you need me for like immediately for something. If not, like call my work phone or text. But if I know if you're calling my cell phone, I know I should answer it because there's something's going on. So lo and behold, as I'm about to go in, as listeners of Wrestling Warzone may know, I'm doing this daily fasting stuff. So it was around like 12:15, and I'm dying, right? Around 12:45 is my eating time. I haven't eaten now in about 16 hours at that point, and I am just like, I am ornery. My cell phone rings, and I'm like, fuck, what's going on? So it's my wife, my three-and-a-half-year-old son, and his older sister were kind of dancing on the bed or something. And she bumped him, and he fell, and he smashed his head onto the middle guardrail or the middle headboard. So she, you know, my wife, she seems okay. So I'm thinking maybe it's not that bad, but she's like, the gash is pretty deep. He's gushing blood. I hear him screaming in the background. So, you know, I'm like, okay, let me stay calm. Let me figure out what to do. So we call our doctor and I'm just like, should I go to the emergency room? Should I come see you? And she's like, go to urgent care. So I call urgent care because I don't want to send my wife there. And then it's like a shit show. And I'm glad I did because they're like, no, don't come here because we would just send you to the children's hospital because you may need like an MRI or a CT scan because it's his head for a concussion.
Right.
So she, we decided to go to the hospital. So she heads to the hospital with her mom and both kids. And I go talk to my boss and my boss is like, you should go. Don't worry about it. Cause I already felt bad because I had already been out 3 days and I'm like, you know, I got shit I got to do, but she's like, just don't worry about it. Just go. So I went to the hospital and there he is. He's got this big gash. Like, I mean like Mick Foley size, like at the side of his head. And he's okay though. He's just kind of chill. So he went in, they didn't observe
any. He had a concussion, right?
No,
that
he did
way
not.
He was chill?
Wait, that's why he's chill. He actually didn't. They didn't observe any signs of a concussion. He's fine. He didn't puke. He didn't pass out. He was acting like himself. And then he took the stitches like a man. Like they did the numbing stuff on his forehead, but, we didn't do like you can like basically drug them, right. To make them like a little bit loopy. So they won't remember the experience. But we right. didn't do that because we're like, nah, he's pretty cool. And they're like, do you want us to wrap him up with this sheet and hold him steady? I'm like, no, I think if you do that, it like almost alarms them more, right? Would you agree with that?
Yeah. For sure.
I would think like if he's wrapped up, he might fight it more, right? He might try and break loose. So I said, no, just sit there and talk to him. And he did. He
like,
laid there and talked.
When you kidnap a child, you wrap them up.
Yeah, I guess. Yes, sure. So anyway, he just laid there and talked, and he was fine. He took the stitches, got 5 stitches, had a popsicle, and he was fine the rest of the night. So he is a tough little son of a bitch, for sure. Took that like a man. So good on him. So there's my no holds barred moment. My son was ripped open by a steel beam,
and then just took it like Mick Foley getting stitched up after Hell in a Cell.
That's what it's like. He was just back there, like when or like when Vince in Beyond the Mask was chatting as he's getting stitches put in. We put on a hell of a show, man. You know, talking to Foley, getting the stitches down in the back. Like it was just that, just talking about Sesame Street while he's getting stitched up like nothing.
Wow. Well, look, I'll tell you something. Mine is not nearly as heartwarming or as nice.
Well, that's good. We should have some variants.
Yeah. So look, I'm going to work it backwards. All right. So the first thing you need to understand is it culminated with me screaming out my car window.
Yes.
Are you out of your fucking mind? Okay. At someone. So we're going to back it up. So Montreal, where I live, for those of you who don't know, is a disaster traffic wise.
Yep.
Just a complete, like every street is closed. You can't get downtown. So we're like, it's usually a 2-lane street and they do this thing where they block it off and you have two-way traffic on that side. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
So we're stuck and I look out the window and I see something that I'm just,
No, hang on. Are you driving alone?
No, I have two people in the car, two employees of mine.
Okay. But it's not your kid. So I want to really set the stage here.
No, but you know what? I would have done the same thing with the kids. Okay. I don't know if I would have cursed. I'm not sure. So this is what I see. I see this woman it's a car. Okay. It's a man driving and there's a woman in the front seat. She's got two pieces of bread on the dash and an open jar of mustard, like just sitting on the dash.
What kind
and
of mustard?
It elicited a rage. I couldn't tell. I think French's. It was just yellow, a big jar with the knife balancing on top. And I can't, like, I hate mustard and I hate messes in cars.
Wait. So, you hate mustard?
Oh, I loathe mustard.
All mustard?
Just all. And I almost hate the color yellow because of it. I mean, I don't want to sound irrational, but like.
And that's very irrational. So you were never Colonel Mustard in Clue?
Oh, God, no. Mr. Green, at the very least.
So hang on. I'm not doing the mustard thing. I'm a mustard fanatic, and I hate ketchup. So I feel like that's why we get along so well. Well, you're the ketchup to my mustard. But
we should have called the show
Ketchup and Mustard. But I'm a fan of more of like Dijon, like Grey Poupon, like honey. Or like a brown. I'm not as big a fan of just pure yellow mustard. But around – so anyway, long story short here. So around here, I never see actual like yellow mustard in jars anymore. So when you said jar, I was picturing like a Grey Poupon because That's what I think of. So I know Canada's a little bit backwards behind the time. So they still have like French is yellow mustard in jars.
Yeah, and healthcare for everyone. Yeah. So besides that, though, so I see this and the knife and it just made me so upset. Number one, you don't make a sandwich in a car. Number two, you don't leave the open mustard in traffic because you're going to get hit. The mustard's going to go everywhere.
Right, right.
So I whip around. I can't do it because I miss them. Like, I just kind of miss the opportunity to yell at them. So I whip around and I go out of my way. And at this point, the people in the car just want to get home. but I'm on a mission now. And I work my way up to beside them. And I finally see the girl and I'm like, hey. And she looks and she's scared because it's just – I understand why she's scared and I understand this is wrong. But I say, are you out of your fucking mind? And – she was French, so she didn't understand anything. So it was all for nothing, but I feel like I felt better having done it.
At least you didn't have the beard anymore. That probably would have scared her even more.
No. The beard, man, I was at the border with the beard. I had a giant beard for a long time. And I was with my family going across the border, and there was this car in front of us. This was a while ago. And all of their brake lights were burnt out. So I thought, you know what? I'm going to go tell them. It's the broad daylight at the border where all the security is, right? So I open the door. I knock on the window. I step back. And it was two young girls. And the fear in their eyes, oh, so arousing. Like it was beautiful. And then for the rest of the trip from the border, they were eyeing us in the rearview mirror. Okay, but you could see my family in the car.
Right, right. Well, anyway, they didn't know it was your family.
No, especially with all the kidnapping I'm doing, apparently.
And they weren't wrapped up, so maybe they were comfortable knowing it was not a kidnapping. But
well, I mean, you wouldn't picture the wrapped up unless you've done it, you know? It would be a peculiar sight to you. You wouldn't say kidnapping because there's a technique to it, you know?
All right, so our pre-match promo is done. That was our no-holds-barred moments of the day, so that was fun. So why don't we get into the first fall here tonight, buddy? And this is maybe a wrestling-based fall. And what we're going to start with is our thoughts on the GWWE Tag Team Project. Of course, our previous audio, like we said over the last year, has been focused on the GWWE audio or singles project. Now we're going to do tag teams. And, of course, that is hot and heavy. The Facebook group is up and running. Lee West, I think he has like a chip in him that knows when we're ready to like – get discussion going on these projects because he returns out of nowhere and just goes like ballistic in a good way. I feel like whenever we're doing the single stuff, if it quelled down, we're like, oh, let's do a piece or do something. Like he would show up that same day. And here it is today. He showed up with a bunch of manic posts in the Facebook group. And they're all, I mean, I love the fire. Whether you agree with the opinions, that's fine. But I love the enthusiasm. So anyway, that said, if you want to be part of that group, let us know. But Aaron, I thought we could start with our initial thoughts. Like, I think on this show, we'll probably spend this first segment a lot of times breaking down teams. So it's kind of our de facto making the cut. But I think what we'll do now is just start with initial thoughts on how we're handling the project, why we did the project, if we're going to enjoy it as much as the singles, I guess, just anything along those lines that you wanted to cover, in the next 20 minutes or so.
Sure. I mean, look, I remember when we first when we were talking about what to do next, there was a lot of talk about either going to 50 teams or staying at 100 teams. And I think we totally made the right choice going to 100.
Right.
Because it's going to allow for so many bullshit nonsense teams to be discussed and tossed about. Because if you try to make 100, 100 teams that have been together and stayed together a long time, you're really stretching at that point.
No, you're lucky if you get 30, I think, to be honest with you.
Yeah. So, and to me, that's the fun of the project,
right?
Seeing all the outliers.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think and this is a talking point tonight in our live chat group. I think one of the differences for me in this project is going to be like I'm really going to weight the highs more because there may be teams that have like three matches together, but they're all big. Or one match together, like Hulk Hogan and Mr. T have been bandied about. Like, where does that rank in, right? So I think stuff like that will be very interesting as we move forward. Because I did not fact, as we really dove into as we went through our list, I didn't always overweight the big moments for guys. I kind of valued more of the depth. But I think with the tag teams, like if a team has a 4.5-star match and then nothing else, like that's enough that maybe they get them on the back end of this list.
Yeah. And I mean, then what do you consider like as part of the list? Like for Hogan and Mr. T, for example, they got the WrestleMania 1. They got that night they tag team Joan Cusack. They have a lot of like really important stuff. So
did you say John Cusack?
I said Joan, but oh, I think okay. They also said John.
Okay, that's why he's so angry in Hot Tub Time Machine. He doesn't want to go back to the 80s.
No, because Mr. T was a strong man. Eddie Murphy taught us what Mr. T would be like in that situation in the 1985 film Delirious, which is unwatchable for some people today. I think when you jump on board that too is like, with it, for those of you who didn't participate in the GWWE, what we did was is we basically worked through four categories, which was nuance, jump up moments, promos, and work rate. But I don't know if we can translate all of that to the tag teams.
Right.
I mean, obviously those are all factors, but like, I mean, most teams don't get a ton of promo time, you know?
Right.
And a lot of them don't have great characters per se. So it really kind of slides the scale to what we're actually judging this on.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you got to figure out like what you're weighing, you know, like, are you weighing teams that were at the very top of the division? Are you weighing teams that transcended the division? Are you weighing teams that had great matches, you know, and how do you balance that against one another?
Yeah. And I think that's all stuff that I will focus on more here than I did last time. Like to me, I didn't care if you were a world champion. You know, I did have the criteria, like we talked about that. If you were my top tier last time was guys that were torchbearers of the company, right? But tag teams rarely are. So that's kind of out of there too. So you may get a team. I think the Rockers is an interesting one, right? Because they were never the top team in the division. They were never getting main event matches. They were never really even focused heavily on pay-per-view, right? So you're really just simply basing it on the work rate that they provide. You know, our work rate category with the singles focused a lot on like top matches and whatnot. But I think here, you're going to have to be a little bit more intuitive with just knowing guys are great workers and focusing on that. So then I boil it down to, okay, well, I know Shawn Michaels is a great worker, and we all know I think Mario Giannetti's a great worker. But do they work well as a team together? And obviously they do. So like I'm going to factor that in too, how they work as a unit. So
the coherence.
Correct. So like, do I think Billy Gunn is a great singles wrestler? No. Do I think Road Dogg was a great singles wrestler or booker? No. But I do think they were great as a team because they played off each other well. They played off each other's strengths. I think the same goes for the B team, right? Michael McGill, oh, what the fuck his name is? Curtis Axel. Outlaws in a way. But sometimes you get that cohesion and all of a sudden guys start working so well together. But it works the other way too. Like you get two great singles guys like a Chris Jericho and a Big Show, right? They're put together and you don't think they'd mesh with the team and boom, magic happens. So I think my whole point is there's so much variance in this project, but I'm really going to weigh team chemistry and work rate as a team and top matches versus almost anything else. Because like you said, very few teams had, high spotlighted runs on top. A lot of teams barely even make pay-per-view, but it doesn't mean they weren't having great matches. And then the elite,
right.
To me, the elite of the elite will be the teams that were kind of rose above the division, either due to longevity or just their standing overall as, you know, getting main event slots. Like I think of like a Dudley's, an Edge and Christian, a New Day, teams that are put into main event situations.
Right.
Like to me, the Edge and Christian, the Dudley's jump up in the Hardys jump up because in 2000, they were even beyond the tag division, right? They were getting main event six men on Raw. Like they were positioned as equals to The Rock and to Triple H and guys like that. They were never buried. Like you jump forward 5 years when the tag division gets nuked by like DX or whatever, you know, like those guys weren't, Kate and Murdoch aren't seen as on the same level as guys like Triple H and Shawn Michaels. Whereas in 2000, the Hardys and Edge and Christian and the Dudleys, and even almost Too Cool to an extent, were like seen as equals to those guys.
Were they like, I don't know. I don't know so much about that. Like I think they were seen as equals enough to tag with them, but not equals enough to replace them. If that makes sense.
Well, no, because they're a tag team, right? So, I mean, and Dirty F is never going to be a tag team. Dirty E was never going to be a tag team promotion. But what I mean is they're not like, You're not going to see The Rock just mow through the tag division in 2000, right? They're seen as guys that can hang in those matches that are presentable alongside those guys. Like, you weren't really seeing Kane and Murdoch teaming with, you know, Triple H. You know what I mean? Like, maybe, like, on a throwaway, but not, like, in a main event program or scene. Like, I feel like in 2000, right, those three teams were really, like, always up in the top echelon, the mix. Like, Edge and Christian are hanging out with Shane McMahon and Kurt Angle in 2000. You know, like, that's like, heady territory. They're fighting Undertaker and Kane. And so, you know, like, they're in the mix, yeah, you know?
Yeah, and they're not just getting murdered by Undertaker and Kane. They're actually somewhat holding. No, like, correct, they're not getting the DDP and Canyon treatment.
Correct.
Like, yeah, I think that's what's going to be interesting too, is to see how people rank the teams that really don't have any. Well, any is not the right word, but don't have a ton of great matches, mm-hmm, but that really almost did transcend the division, right, like the aforementioned New Age Outlaws. Like, what do you do with them? Because
right,
when you look at their matches, there's nothing really that stands out as a tremendous match. I mean, short of they were in that 10-man, right, on Raw with Rikishi.
Yeah,
and,
I think so. Was that just Road Dogg? I think Billy Gunn was hurt already.
Yeah. So you got a team like that, but I would say for 97, 98, and part of 99, like, they were as over as anyone in the promotion.
Right.
Right? So how do you place them? Do they become a top 10 team for you based on that? You know, like, is it – it just depends what you value, right? Do you value a team like the Rockers who – I mean, they're always over. They have great matches, but they never reach that kind of status that, mm-hmm, the New Age Outlaws did.
Hey, so just, it'll be just to cut in real quick, that match was neither Road Dogg or Billy Gunn were in it. They came out after. So Billy was not hurt. This was before No Way Out. It's Triple H, X-Pac, Benoit, Saturn, Malenko.
That's right.
Against Rock, Cactus Jack, Rikishi, and Too Cool. So. Right. All right, continue.
Yeah, we didn't want to get that wrong. We'll get hate mail immediately.
We can't start off on a wrong foot like that.
No, we'll be so fucked. Like, I mean, how will we recover from that hate mail?
We never will.
But I guess all I'm saying is, like, how do we rank that, and where it's going to fall is going to be very interesting. Like, I can see some people arguing to have a team like them not on a list, which I think will be crazy, but I can see that happening. And I think you're going to run into a similar thing when you deal with Demolition, for example. Mm-hmm. Like, what, like, yeah, off the top of your head, like, you're, like, obviously we're not making our lists yet, but, like, where do you see a team like Demolition landing in your list?
I mean, at first, yes, I'd say top 10 to 15.
Yeah. Yeah, because, I mean, they were pretty almost a main event act.
Right. Oh, yeah.
In a time where you had the biggest main event acts ever, almost.
And they were on top of a deep tag division. They were, like, the premier team for years. I think, you know, we talked about this a lot on the singles guys. Moments meant a lot for me, like big moments. I think for tag teams, they almost mean more because there's so few. The teams don't get as many chances. So that's where the Outlaws get propped up for me, right? Because they have so many memorable moments and angles and promos. And that almost cancels out the lack of matches. Because all these other teams may have a ton of great matches, but they don't get the chance to have great moments and be involved in stuff like DX and its prime and shit like that. So I think that's where a team like the Outlaws and eventually a team like Demolition are going to benefit because they were given chances to pile up those moments.
Yeah. Yeah. And the more I weigh it too, like, I mean, I've started looking at stuff, but I was pretty sure the Rockers were going to finish extremely high on my list and mm-hmm. still might. But as I'm starting to weigh teams against them, there's quite a few that are really just passing them by based on moments, longevity, like, and whatnot. So I'm curious to see where they end up too, because they're often considered the best tag team in company history. And I don't know if that's true anymore.
Right. And I think it was I think that was more of a legit talking point probably pre-2016-ish. When the Usos really built up their resume and then New Day is really coming to their own. So, like, I think there's more competition now toward the top than there would have been probably, like, in, say, 2013, you know, I think.
Right.
And also, you know, one of the big talking points we've had so far in the group is around three, you know, teams of three, basically, the trios. So if they're presented – so the way we're doing it is if they're presented as a threesome – teams like the New Day, Valiance, you know, their eligible to be represented as three, right? So, like, the New Day counts as one team because they're pretty much presented as one team. The Freebird rule, kind of, right? So, but then you have factions that weren't really teams, but members of the teams would team up often. And to us, that was teams like Evolution and the Shield. So,
Kai and Tai.
Yeah, Kai and Tai, yep. So they're on
Oddities.
There. What was the last one there?
The Oddities.
Of course, right. You may have Golga and Kurrigan. You may have, so. But
Silva.
With the factions, you may get Rollins and Ambrose team for a while, and then it's Ambrose and Reigns, and then Reigns and Rollins. So, like, all those teams are individually entered on the list, and that goes for Evolution as well. So you have Ric Flair and Batista, you have Randy Orton and Batista, you have Triple H and Ric Flair. So, like, all that stuff is on there separately because that's how they're presented. They're not presented as actual teams. They're presented as factions fighting as teams. And then the third bucket is teams that had different iterations, right? So that is Demolition. You had Axe and Smash were a separate team from Smash and Crush. You had Orient Express. Sato and Tanaka were different from Kato and Tanaka. So those teams are also represented separately. So you'll have to clarify, you know, original Demolition, new Demolition. So I think those are just some clarification points that we have in there.
Well, let me just jump in and ask you something too, because like when you're talking about a group like the Shield, right? Like you obviously you have Reigns and Rollins that were the tag team champions. Then later you had Rollins and Ambrose who were the tag team champions. But where do you land on like who does the six man work go to? Because arguably all their best stuff is their six man work.
Right. So I think the six man work goes to all three of them as team, right? So I think you just credit all three teams.
I just muddied the whole water.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how else you would do it unless you want to now change the rule that the Shield should be just one. It's up to you. I just feel like they were never presented as an interchangeable group. They wrestled a lot of six man matches, but they were never just like, to me, like the New Day, we saw even Money in the Bank. Who's going to, you know, who's going to be the guy in the match? So it's like, they're almost like a rotating group, whereas the Shield always seemed to have more defined roles. Like it was Ambrose the singles and Rollins and Reigns was more the team, right?
Yeah, the architect,
correct.
The lunatic fringe, and the big dog.
Yes.
No. Ow!
That's
music. You know, I'm tired of the music, so that should be his music. It's just be a dog howling as he makes his way to the ring, and it will drown out the booze.
That's true. It will. Just Evan's like, oh, they're just howling with him. So one other clarification point we had, too, was around – all right, so here's the example we used, right? So it counts multi-man tags and gimmick matches as long as the tag team was part of the match. So say there's a Survivor Series match or a SummerSlam six-man with, like, the Rougeaus, where they're both in as Rougeaus. Like, that counts for me and for everyone. This is the rules. But if Jacques Rougeau is the Mountie, is in an eight-man tag at WrestleMania 8, like, that doesn't count as a tag team match. It for me, like, I don't count his work in that match. I don't think anyone in their right mind would, but I don't count that.
Have you watched the match? Have you watched his amazing abilities in the match? He was the closest to getting to Ray Combs. He would have fucking shocked the shit out of Ray Combs. It would have driven him to suicide years earlier.
Poor Ray Combs. I am a Ray Combs fan.
Me too.
So anyway, does that make sense? That rule?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, yeah, as long as they're the team in the match, it's fine. And, I mean, who knows what kind of bullshit people are going to pull later. Like, like suddenly some idiot will argue that, like, Bret Hart fighting Doink is one and then fighting Lawler right after is one match where it's really two. Like, someone's going to make a stupid point like that.
Yeah, you may get some moron on that side of that. Oh, wait. So anyway, but the But yeah, so I think there is a clarification there. Like, the work has to be as part of the team and not just a guy. So, like, I wouldn't count, like, the British Bulldog teaming with Ricky Steamboat and Texas Tornado and a six-man as part of, like, Bulldog's tag catalog.
Oh, no, but you wouldn't be looking at him, like, it's team by team, right? Like, you shouldn't be looking at, like, okay, how does it work into Davey Boy Smith's tag catalog.
Correct.
Like you're looking at Davey Boy Smith.
I think this call out was meant to explain, right? Kind of.
Right. And we did a poor job. It's just too many tangents. So like that year where Bret Hart was on one Survivor Series team and Jim Neidhart was on another.
Right. That does not count.
No, good. Stupid decision, by the way, if I may.
It was an odd decision. One of the four times I tried to make Brett a singles guy.
And they just kept promising him. I'm like a fucking loser. You know, one of these days I'm going to get it.
I'm going to stop being a solo in the SummerSlam.
Everybody knows that the Hitman, I don't care if it's Shawn Michaels, my loving brother Owen.
Okay. All right, so any other rules or initial thoughts? We got a few minutes left here.
No, but what I wanted to get to is, like, who right now, who are you dangling? Who's in the mix for your top spot? Like, I know it's nowhere near solidified, but right. Who are some teams that you're considering for the number one spot?
All of the Harris Twin teams.
Yeah. Perfect.
No, so I would say, the Rockers are up there. The Usos are up there. New Day is up there. The Harpa Nation's in the conversation. Edge and Christian and the Hardys are in the conversation. And I think you'd have put the Dudleys in there. They're more toward the back end. I want to say World's Greatest Tag Team is sniffing, right?
They're great. Yeah.
So they're probably there. And I'm totally just ignoring, I'm sure there's some teams as I could dig through 70s and early 80s stuff that'll pop, right? I'm sure there'll be some from the Samoans and teams like that or whatever.
Nobody cares. Nobody cares about that stuff.
Sure. But you got to talk about it.
I'm just being divisive, all right? I'm just being divisive.
Divisive for sure. So anyway, I think those are the main ones I would consider off the top of my head. I'm probably missing a couple, but.
Yeah, I think for me right now, for me, I only see three teams competing for number one. Mm-hmm. And that's the Usos, the New Day, and the Hardys. I think those three are just right now just a cut above everybody else.
Yeah. I mean, if I had to just throw a list on paper right now, I think the Hardys may be my one.
I think Usos may be mine, but it's very, very tricky. And then you got to figure out – I'd have to figure out what to do with a team like the Revival, who – I think is responsible for the greatest tag team matches in company history.
Right.
And their stuff is so high end. So what do you, even the Rockers don't have a match that comes close to mm-hmm. Revival Do It Yourself. And even earlier in the year when Revival was fighting the American Alpha.
Right.
Those matches are really kind of transcendent matches. So I got to figure out what to do with a team like that because they deserve to be high up, but mm-hmm. they've just been so mishandled on the main roster so far.
Right. So, I think that counts, right? So I do think they're probably – I think there's a case for them inside the top 15 to 20. I think that they're there because, you said, their match-by-match catalog is – well, at least as of a year ago would have been immaculate, but now it's dipped a bit. I think that's a good example, a perfect example of – the different, on a singles list, those guys are down the bottom, which they were for many.
Yeah.
Or a singles guy like that would be probably down the bottom. I think we had a few, Sami Zayn and others. But on a tag list, we've talked about, where everything's thinner and there's more competition, but it's not as strong. So a team like that can rise quickly if they have a bucket of four plus star matches, regardless of the stage it was on. And the good promos and everything else. And I think it depends. We saw a lot of people in last year's project that kind of, I don't want to say discounted NXT, but seemed to count it for less credit.
Yeah, it didn't happen.
Right.
The attitude of if it didn't happen on the main roster, it's not as valuable. And I never understood that argument at all.
Right. It should still count. And NXT, what I think will help a team like the Revival is, a lot of their best stuff, almost all their best stuff, is on the biggest shows for NXT, right? So it's
yes.
If you can't count a TakeOver at this point as a major show, I don't know what, you could argue matches that occur on TakeOver are bigger than matches that happen on SmackDown, even though it's just on the network, they're clearly presented as supercards. So I think some of these teams like a DIY, the Revival, American Alpha, those teams are going to benefit because their best work was all on those TakeOvers.
Yeah, I would go some further and say that a lot of times the takeovers are – you look forward to a takeover more than you do the actual pay-per-view.
Yeah, I agree. And there are major arenas.
Hell in a Cell. That was not Hell in a Cell.
you know, well, I could see discrediting guys working at Full Sail. You know, if you really want to go to that level, you could say, okay, well, it's NXT small. But, I mean, you know, you're in front of, whatever, 13, 14,000, 18,000 in Brooklyn on SummerSlam weekend in a, you know, five-match card, all headline. Like, that's a fucking big spot. I don't care what you're saying. Like, that's it's crazy to delude yourself otherwise.
It's the same crowd, too. Like, that was the argument, too. It's always the same crowd. Absolutely not. It's the same crowd that's going to see the pay-per-view.
Right. Yep.
So if you're giving credit to the guys on the pay-per-view for the crowd, you have to give credit to the guys on NXT as well.
Agreed. All right.
It's insane. Yeah. Look, make your lists, all right? Send them in. We will ridicule them. That's what we do.
That's what we do. And it's going to be a lot of fun, so you really should participate. I'm looking forward to it. You know, I'm going to be starting my research more in earnest, I think, along with us doing these shows. So we're going to reserve a segment on the show, a fall on the show, to dive into this project and look at different teams like we did on Making the Cut. So we'll be getting content here via that, but we'll also be talking other stuff, so that'll be fun. Yeah? Did you hear the way my voice is connected at the end? Okay. All right, so why don't we take a break, which is something I don't know if we've ever done, Aaron, but we're going to take a break. And when we come back, it'll be time for our second fall.
Nope.
No what? No go? Okay.
Fall number two.
Okay, let's take a break. We'll be back after this. Goodbye. For now.
Sorry. Yeah.
Upside down and inside out. I'm about to show all you folks what it's all about. Now it's time for to get on the mic and make this motherfucking party hot.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the pro wrestling only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Hi, folks. We are back.
Back.
I guess this is, I'm trying to think of the word, nominally the first episode of this podcast, but we're pretending it's not. But it is the premiere episode of No Holds Barred, the podcast, and we're having a fun time, as always, talking. So we did some GWWE tag team talk, and we're going to continue wrestling here on the second fall. And with that, Aaron, my idea for this fall long term would be something along the lines of like watching random stuff and talking about it. I feel like I do a lot of review type stuff, but it's always like very chronological. And that's partially on me being anal about it. But I think what I'd like to do is maybe do random stuff, whether it's a current day match or show, maybe a Mid-Atlantic from like 1983. You know, something like random that we throw in and just talk about. It doesn't even have to be a review, just a chat. But what we wanted to do to level set before we get to that is on tonight's episode, talk about where we are as wrestling fans. So, you know, what do you watch? How are you feeling as a fan? Are you more of a fan than ever? Are you the least interested you've ever been? What are your favorite things to do and watch and talk about? Just kind of an overall snapshot of your fandom.
Yeah, and I think that's a great leveling place and a great place for us to start, because then that'll be a nice contrast when we're watching stuff that we actually cared about.
There you go.
And so it begins. So for you, where do you find excitement in the product nowadays? Well, what are the things that like titillate you, if you will?
Oh, titties. So I would say sorry, just was looking at Ricardo Rodriguez on my TV and I just said titties. I would say what excites me the most on the current product has little to do with the product itself and more to do with the camaraderie around the product.
Right.
like, I like going to the big shows with a group of people from Place to Be Nation. Like, this year I went to the Royal Rumble, went to WrestleMania, hung out with a lot of cool people. Like, to me, the weekend around it is, like, my favorite part. But you also, we've built up a group mainly that can separate, like, online or on these podcasts, you know, I think we're all very critical about the overall booking and presentation. But WWE has made their product in such a way these days that if you're going to one of the bigger shows, there's likely something there for you to really enjoy. And with the group that we hang out with, it's almost hard not to have it be infectious. Like, to go to a show, you know, whether it's with you or like D'Amato or Roger or, you know, Steve Willey or, you know, like any of these guys or girls that have been, you know, and like at WrestleMania, me and Jenny and Stacy, like all these people that we've hung out with and went to shows with, it becomes like you get wrapped up in it and it becomes an event. So to me, like, that's been the best part of the current product for me, is like having the means to go to these shows and travel and hang out with these people. And by proxy, I don't feel like I go to the show and then grouse about it. Like, you just get so wrapped up in the atmosphere of the weekend that it just becomes like a big sporting event. And yeah, you may get matches that aren't that great or the booking, but overall the shows are a ton of fun. And to me, where I found making WWE tolerable, and I don't know if this has been by design by them, but whatever, is just not caring at all about the booking. Like, I listen to other podcasts and even the reaction shows, and there's such anger. And I was there, you know, go listen to Clotheslines and Headlines or PTB 5 years ago. Anger about a guy being buried or losing a match and all this, like, and this is the wrong booking, and Bayley shouldn't have, you know, lost in 6 minutes. She should have went 9, like, you know, and stuff like that. And if you completely divest yourself of that, and I don't know, maybe as adults you should anyway, but if you divest yourself of that and just kind of enjoy it where you can, like, I found it's made the WWE product much more enjoyable. It allows you to kind of cherry pick the stuff you want to get into. You know, I enjoy the matches. I enjoy watching the special events or pay-per-views or whatever. If people come over or talking online during them, like, to me, being able to just separate myself from the emotional, like, ups and downs of the week-to-week booking, because there's so many hours and so many matches. And I've said it a million times that, sure, it's not the best business practice, but I don't get upset when a guy, like, loses and it's dumb, because if they want to push him again, they just will. Like, this is how it's always been over the last 4 or 5 years with them. And, like, to get upset over someone losing a match on Raw, like, it's the end of the world. Like, this is the worst decision, was having Seth Rollins lose this match. It's like, no, he could probably just win 3 weeks later in the same fucking match. Like, again, I'm not defending this methodology that they're using, but if this is what they're going to present, that's how I'm going to view it, is that I don't care if a guy loses, because I don't have that emotional connection. I'm just going to kind of enjoy it for what it is. And they give me plenty of bang for my buck via the network with all the old stuff I could want to watch. And the new stuff they give, there's enough on there to make it worthwhile. And I watch Raw as background noise while I'm doing podcasts. I have SmackDown on my iPad while I'm watching TV. And if there's something that piques my interest, I put the volume up. So it's like, you know, if you're trying to consume in real time all of the hours of programming and be emotionally invested, I could see the frustration. But if you're able to separate yourself from that part of it, I think it's an easier way to digest what they're presenting at this point. So a lot of words.
Do you find, no, it's good. I appreciate it. Do you find that, do you ever find a bit of sadness though, in the fact that this was something that would elicit an emotional reaction from you and make you care, and it just doesn't do that anymore?
But it does. It's just not, I let it happen where I want it to happen. Right. So right. Like, I used to, like, we used to nitpick every match and every booking result and every, and some still do. But now I get invested when I want. Like, I was in love at WrestleMania watching the Ronda Rousey, Triple H, Kurt Angle, Steph match. Like, I had the best time watching that match. Like, I loved that match. I'm a big Ronda Rousey fan. I love Kurt Angle. I think Triple H and Stephanie in that role were tremendous. Like, everything about that match I loved. The Royal Rumble, I got completely sucked into the end with Nakamura and Reigns, and even, you know, Asuka and all that. And the Women's Rumble. Going to TakeOver, those TakeOvers, like, I went to those two TakeOvers this year, were amazing. Gargano and Almas and Gargano and Ciampa. Like, those were you know, I got invested into those matches, so I can do it. I'm just not going to nitpick the minutia of the minute to minute of the fucking five, or, you know, if you count NXT, six first run hours of TV a week, because they're just trying to fill time. And
yeah,
you know, it's just everything ebbs and flows from week to week. To get upset over 1 4-minute segment on one edition of Raw, like, to me, is just such a waste of time, because they don't care. So, like, why are we getting upset that New Day looks stupid in this one angle, or they look kind of weak heading into this match, because they can just show up in the match and whatever, turn it around. So it's just like, I don't know, like, that part of it is why I've divested myself from, but there are still times where I can get invested. Daniel Bryan's return is another one.
Yeah. See, like, for me, like, I mean, I came to a realization a long time ago that, like, it's not the main product isn't for me anymore.
Right.
Like, I'm not the person it's designed for anymore.
Correct.
And it has very much become a social exercise.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's friends come over, watch the pay-per-view, and my son is getting to like it too. So I watch the pay-per-views and I see it through his eyes, and seeing him enjoy it is actually quite fun. And we go to see live shows, and, you know, it's good from that. And I can enjoy it on that level. Where I have trouble is, the only time I have trouble with it really anymore is when basic writing things don't make sense anymore. I have the same problem with television shows or anything that kind of go off the rails, or movies that don't make sense. But, mm-hmm. like, I'm always baffled that, like, with the amount of writers they have and the amount of time that they have, sometimes they can't put together a coherent story, like, which is really all you need to hook me.
Right.
Like, I will go in and out depending on who's being booked and whatnot. And if someone I don't love is being booked on top, I can find joy in the other matches, kind of like how you were saying too, right? But I have trouble when the basics of storytelling are not there anymore. And that's what makes me less invested. And that's stuff I feel they could still just do if they just put some thought into it, you know? And those are the things that take me out of it. For a long time, I had become very much all about the alternatives.
Right.
I got very much into Ring of Honor, very much into New Japan, very much into Lucha Underground, which I think is still tremendous.
Mm-hmm.
But there's just too much to watch and not enough time.
Yeah.
And to follow all these things now, it's impossible. So I'm at a point now where I can't sit through a Raw or a SmackDown, because it's just too – I'm a bit too mind-numbing. And not that you won't get a good match or anything, but I don't love watching a product that's always telling me about the next product all the time. Like, it's not happening now. It's always about what's happening later.
Right.
I'm all pay-per-views and stuff like that. But I mean, like, one of the – like, I hate turning on a pay-per-view, and, like, the first thing I see is the advertisement for the next pay-per-view.
Yeah.
We have lots of time to build to that. We can work through that. So I just have trouble with that from that end, and I don't understand how they can't – I mean, I guess they just don't care to give the coherent story.
Correct. I think it's what it is. It's like also the same complaint that drives me nuts is the one about WrestleMania being 7 hours or this and that. It's like or having concerts. And if that stuff bothers you, then you're not really grasping like what they're giving. Like, then it's not for you, because what they're trying to do is just build up this, you know, Super Bowl massive weekend where it's just this, you know, festival atmosphere where their Mania is the main course with all this other stuff and all these other promotions and other, you know, conventions and everything circling around it. And it's meant to just be this one day, this massive show. And it's like, I guess the people that take the offense to like the long, you know, the long pay-per-views going 4 hours and everything else, it's like, yeah, I know the cross argument is don't watch, you know, you don't have to watch it then if you don't want to. And at the end of the day, they're giving you more value for your dollar, but is it too much value? So it's like, I get the push and pull that.
Yeah, that's a very yes and no argument, because like sometimes more is actually less. Like, and I think we've seen that in the last few pay-per-views where we get to like hour three and the crowd is dead. Like, you're burnt out watching it. Like, and things aren't – you don't enjoy things to the same level if you're tired.
Right.
So I've always felt the, like, don't watch it argument if you don't want to. Like, it's true. You don't have to watch it. But, like, I think we're all kind of addicted to wrestling on some level, and we're addicted to WWE wrestling.
Correct.
You know, so it's don't watch it. Yeah, I still want to enjoy it. I still want to get my fix. But like, the long thing is, you're right. You could not watch it. But again, you have to question if it actually hurts it. Like, it's hard to criticize the company now, right? Because the ace in the hole they have is that, well, we're making more money than ever, so obviously what we're doing is working. But there's no reason why they can't do that and also have artistic excellence.
Right.
But that's just not their priority. And I struggle with that, like, as an artist myself. Like, I struggle with the idea that, like, man, if I had unlimited money like they do, like, I would constantly be pushing myself and pushing the envelope and seeing where it could go, you know? And that's just not something they're interested in doing anymore. And above anything else, that's what I lament. It doesn't make me angry. It makes me sad. Mm-hmm. It makes me think, like, oh, like, this is something that was so precious to me and that I loved. And maybe it has to do with growing up as well.
But I think that's a part of it. I do think it's a part of it. I think, yeah, because we've seen, and I got 3 points. I don't want to forget any of them. But I think what we've seen is, we've seen so much, right? So we know the history and what it was at one certain point, and I do think nostalgia clouds it a bit, right? So, like, I saw, like the Cowboys' nephew has just, like, gotten super hard into wrestling over the past 6 months. And to him, it's like, this is all he's ever known, right? So he's over here, and he's loving this pay-per-view that we watched the other night a few weeks ago, and he's super into it. He talks about it nonstop, and he has to go to every show. They're going to Raw in 2 weeks because he has to go see it. And I think that's where we were, you know, at one point. So I think part of it has to do with growing up. I do. I think, and it's not just because we're older. I think it's just that we've seen and been through so much that we're naturally going to become somewhat cynical on the whole thing.
See, but you'd think that, yeah, like, and I would think that, and that's the kind of thing that happened to me in my mid-20s. In my mid-20s, like, I wasn't into Cena as a character. I wasn't angry that he was there, but so I stopped watching for a while. But then when they had that Punk thing in summer 2011, I was invested as I ever was, and I was an adult at that point.
Right, but so, I think you're less – your rope in your slack gets lesser, right? Because I think part of it has to do with time. Right, you've mentioned before your time is so limited that your slack is shorter, right? Like, I'm not going to stick around and give them the benefit of the doubt. I think as a kid, whatever, you got nothing but time to just watch the stuff. And you also, again, don't have the perspective of the years and years and years that we've had to live through. Not just go back and watch great matches, which they can do, to actually in real time live through the bad and the good and the ebbs and the flows. And I think, you know, we know what it could be and we know what it could be on the other side too, right? It could be even worse. So I think we have so much more depth and perspective to what wrestling was that I think that also colors kind of our view of it now. And I think part of it's just fatigue as well. Like anything, you're just going to eventually, even if you love it, you're just going to grow tired of it at some point, right? You're just going to say your patience just dwindles on stuff. It's like, oh, like I don't need to see this fucking match. I've seen this exact match a million times now. Like, and kids haven't. So I think when you say like the product that isn't geared to us, I think you're right. And I think they found a way to make the network and all the other surroundings geared to us to keep us hanging on. And that's loads of old content. That's NXT. That's, you know, to an extent, 205 Live and the UK tournament and the Mae Young tournament. Like that stuff, they found a way to do both finally by creating this own network. And whether it's a straw man, a figurehead or whatever, propped up Triple H as the guy behind all this stuff is the future. To keep guys like us that are, you know, dialed into that style, just kind of more involved, as well as the main product, which is more for maybe fans come in and out, or, you know, younger fans that don't know any better, as well. So the other point I just want to make too is when I was trying to say like if you don't like it or you don't want to care for it, like you don't have to watch it. I would add one caveat to that, like you don't have to watch it now, and I think that's what it's become. And I think that speaks to the digital streaming DVR age. Like, I don't have to watch Raw now. But that doesn't mean I don't want to watch it, because there's still some good stuff in there. And I can move through and skim through, or I can watch a pay-per-view at any time now on their network. I don't have to have ordered it at 8 o'clock. And I don't think they care. Like, you see it all the time. Like, oh, this pay-per-view's up against this, or they're going against football. Oh, they're going to get killed. Like, I don't think they care, because I can watch the football game and they're still getting my $9.99, and I'll watch the show at 11. Like, what does it matter to them when I watch the show if I'm already giving them the money? That's why, to me, the network was kind of brilliant, even though you're saying, oh, they were getting $60 a pop for these shows, and now they're getting 10 for all this other shit. But you know what? They have your 10 locked in. The 50 to 60 was never a guarantee. So, I mean, if the money's already paid for and they don't care, like, oh, you know, if you're watching something else or tuning in late, like, that stuff doesn't matter. So it all depends on you as a fan, whether you care to watch it on time or later. So I think that would be my caveat to, if you don't like the 4-hour shows, don't watch. No, I'd say just don't watch it now. See what was good and watch it later, you know, like whatever. Like, doesn't mean you don't have to watch the product. You just don't have to watch every second of the product. Like, that's what they've created, is this so much content that you can pick and choose what you want, but they don't care because they're kind of getting their nut anyway, whether it's through the TV networks paying up front, right? They don't get paid by ads anymore. They get paid by the network buying in. So they're getting the money there, and they're getting the money from the network. So if you're not watching live, you're not watching all of it. I don't think they care. And I think the booking plays into that, right? Because they're not putting shit out there that, like, is must see, because they know that they can catch you at any point in these 3 hours. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. It just makes it gives you a different experience when it comes to immersion in the product.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
In that, like, if you're going to pick and choose what's good, then you're losing the real time attachment to storylines and the drama of the match itself. Because if you hear something's good, chances are you probably have heard how it finishes already.
Right.
You know, like, so I think you're losing something there. And, like, again, it doesn't matter to them. Like, they don't care about that. Like, that's why it doesn't matter to them. Like, when we nitpick things that should make sense that don't, you know, like details they don't care about anymore. Like a stupid one, like such a stupid thing. But like AJ Styles in that third match with Nakamura not wearing a cup, like it's like, you know, 20 years ago there'd be thought put into that,
right?
But that's just not their mindset at all anymore.
Right?
It's just all about massive amounts of content for everyone to eat. And like we've been saying, it's got its pros and its cons. Like, the con is, I don't really care about anything anymore, but I get entertained by what I see, you know? But then again, like, who knows? Like, my son loved Money in the Bank. I liked most of it, you know? And at this point, that's kind of what's important to me.
Right. There's a point you made a while ago, and I had a kind of, or a pile-on point, and I can't remember. What did you talk about last time you talked? Do you remember?
Well, I was talking about how, like, the revival would probably be in my top. Is that too far back?
Too far back. Rewind just one talking paragraph there.
I was talking about coherent storylines. Mm. I was talking about – this is great radio. I'm kicking my foot on the ground. This is great radio. I was talking about coherent storylines. I was talking about
Yeah, you don't remember.
No, I have no clue.
Anyway, I'm sure it was a great point.
Got it. We got it. I bet it was amazing.
Yeah, so you made a good point earlier, too, about other stuff. Like, you see that a lot, too. Like, oh, there's so much other stuff. Why are you wasting your time on Raw? But I would argue I'm not even wasting my time on that. There's so much to consume out there. There's so much content beyond even wrestling, and with a job and with kids and time spent there. It's like that stuff I really don't have time to dive into. And when you talk about a lack of emotional connection, I have a hard time getting into something that, like, I don't say I didn't grow up with, because there are TV shows I get into now. We'll talk about one of them later, where I didn't grow up with, right? But like a sports team, I think, is the closest analogy. Like, mm-hmm. I grew up a Yankee fan, grew up a Jets fan, grew up a Friars, like all these things. But I grew up a Hornets fan in basketball. And when they left and gutted that team, I kind of was a man without a team. And I've had a real hard time, like, finding another basketball team to be so emotionally invested in. And I feel like that's kind of where I'm at with wrestling. Like, I just grew up so ingrained with WWE that I can enjoy the wrestling, but, like, I can't allow myself to become a diehard Ring of Honor fan or a diehard Impact guy or a diehard New Japan fan, because I just don't have that nostalgic, like, I didn't grow up just loving it. And I have a hard time, me personally, like, falling in love with that and becoming just this diehard fan. Like, I like the Bulls because of Chris Dunn, but I can't say I'm like, I don't wake up every morning, check the Bulls box score, watch every Bulls game. you know, but I watch every Yankee game I can. I watch every Jets game I can because those are the teams I grew up with loving. And I think Dirty is just the same, right? Now, I don't know what my connection and love would be to Dirty if it weren't for the online boom and eventually the podcast boom and the Facebook group boom. You know, like a lot of that has kept me in it. Like if it was just still me and like three other friends, like it was like through some of the 2000s, like watching it live, I don't know where I'd be. But having a sudden group of 15 to 20 people to cherry pick from, to talk about, to attend shows with, like that has really amped up my investment as well.
Yeah. I mean, I would agree. If I didn't have the social aspect anymore, I probably wouldn't be watching the pay-per-views. It just probably wouldn't happen. Like, and I'd just be watching old stuff. But I don't know. Like, in a way, I'm glad that we have that social thing.
Yeah.
I have one friend who just hates everything, but...
Jordan?
No, it's not Jordan, but he's my friend. but no, like... Yeah, I just find it so easy to get down the rabbit hole and so easy to care about everything they do when... Mm-hmm. When they don't care, so correct. It doesn't matter. Yeah.
That's the time. Like, they don't care. Like, they don't care. So why should you care? Why should you care that so-and-so lost this match? Because they don't care. You know? So it's like...
Right. Then,
and again, it's not a good business practice, but this is what it is.
Because the next step from that, though, is if they don't care, why am I giving them any money?
Right. Because they give you other stuff to care that you cared about right now.
Sure.
Like, that's where they're at right now.
Like, I've had a couple of instances where I've seen them as a company and been so upset and almost never wanted to give them any money again. Like this is a small example, but, like, I remember going to see a Raw or a SmackDown or something. And around 10 o'clock, seeing a kid getting carried out by his father, like, all decked out in Cena gear, having not seen Cena yet because they're saving him for the end. And it's like a slew of little things like that. That it's like, why don't you care just a little? Just a little that there are 8-year-olds in the audience who need to go to bed. Why don't you let him open the show or put him a bit earlier? You know?
Yeah, I think that goes for all sports at this point, though, right?
What do you mean?
Like World Series games that start at 9 o'clock. Like that's a big bitch in the baseball world.
Sure.
Right? That fans can't watch basketball games, NBA finals starting at 8:30, 9 o'clock. So, I mean, I think that's
–
UFC starts at 10. Like I know there's not really young fans watching UFC, but I think it's just a product of time zones and presentation and your top stars go on last.
Right,
but I get your overall point. I know. I
but
get
none of them
point.
Cater to youth the way
I think
WWE.
Baseball should.
I think it should. I think it does. Like
yeah. –
Like sports in general those are also things that have just always been at those times. They've always been at night, you know. Like, but when you and I grew up watching wrestling, we watched an afternoon on a Saturday,
right?
And so that was like we knew it was for us. And now it's professed to be for them, but it's a show that starts at like 8 o'clock at night and runs till 11.
Right. Well,
it's a strange dichotomy there. It's interesting. Yeah.
But I would argue you can watch it now whenever you want. And they've made it easy to do so with Hulu and YouTube and DVR. I mean, you know, I mean, there's a million ways to watch everything you want. So I mean, I get your overall point. I do. I just think there's other ways to get around that point. But the like you said about the fan being there, I would say don't bring your kid if you're not going to commit to staying.
If your kid's asleep.
Well, I know. But you know what you're getting. You know Cena's probably not coming out to the end. But anyway, here or no there. All right. I think it's a good discussion. I don't think we even got into it. Like, I mean, overall, like, I still love wrestling. Obviously, I spend hours and hours of my week talking about it, writing about it, watching it. I think my heart is still more with the older stuff. And it has nothing to do with, Card Day's trash. Like, I don't think it's trash. The emotional level of connection just isn't there where I just like watching the older stuff. Like, this is where I'm at. And I'm fine with it. Like, I'm not going to go on shows and shit talk the current product because I just don't have interest in acting that way and dumping on the booking and this and that. Like, that's like one of the biggest waste of times you can get into at this point. I'd rather just watch the stuff I care about, talk about that, and move on.
Yeah. And in the end, that's what makes me sad.
Right. Oh yeah,
it makes me sad. Yeah. Something we cared about enough to do that now elicits, because I'm on board with you. It elicits that same reaction of like, okay, great. Like, Nakamura won, Nakamura lost, doesn't matter.
In the end, it doesn't really matter.
Like a lot of things.
game so far. All right, why don't we take a break?
Yeah,
we're doing a break. We come back. We're gonna put wrestling in the box for the third fall. We're gonna switch up some our topic to a little pop culture. We'll get into that after this. Watch the time go right out the window. Trying to hold on, didn't even know I wasted it all just to watch you go. I kept everything inside, and even though I tried, it all fell apart. What it meant to be will eventually be a memory of a time I tried so hard and got so far. Place V Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceVNation.com. We offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place V Nation Wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, along with Main Event, Survey Says, the Monday Night Wars, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction show, as well as Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver special network podcasts and pod blasts on topics old and new.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Match of the Week podcasts, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Through the Years, Worldcast, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Center Stage, and Letters from Kayfabe, plus much more. And on our very popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as Talking Pop, the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, NBA Team, PTBN Play, Sunday Groove, Breaking Balls, and Lucha Undead,
as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans
with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversations, Geek and Sassy, and Marvel Age Podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows, plus archives of our past podcasts, including the Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback today. All these shows, plus others, available at PlaceVNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects, and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaceVNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceVNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Spider-Man, Spider-Man does whatever a spider can. Spins a web any size, catches thieves just like flies. Look out, here comes the Spider-Man.
And we're back! So, we're at the third fall. Mm-hmm. We've talked a bit of wrestling. Thank you for sticking with us, by the way, on No Holds Barred. We've only called each other jockass a couple of times, which I think is quite a huge amount of restraint on both our parts.
Dookie!
And Dookie! So, third fall, we're going to talk some pop culture. And I think this is fascinating. You're going through this now.
Mm-hmm.
So you're diving into the comic book world, right?
Maybe like wading in.
Wading. You're dipping your foot in the pool?
Yeah, yeah. You know, I'm not like whole hog, I guess somebody say. You know, I'm not like balls deep into comics right this moment. I am not like I'm not devouring them. I'm not like, you know, reading everything I can on them. So like my extent right now, so you want me to give a background on how I got here, or did you have more questions?
Well, no, just go into the background, and I'm gonna drill you. Like, this is gonna be quite the interrogation.
Balls deep, drill me. Here we go.
It's sex jokes.
So you know, obviously as part of PlayStation.com, we've had a very robust comics portfolio, I guess is the word. We have like really knowledgeable comics folks as part of the staff. Guys I've known for a long time, like Greg Phillips and Nick Duke, Tim Capel, you know, like those dudes I've known forever on blogs and shit, but I had never really met them in person. Or Ben,
is
like
there a
close.
Reason why you completely ignored Ben Morse?
Well, I said people I've known forever. So that was Greg,
okay,
Nick.
Fair enough.
So I'm getting there. So I'm going through my timeline. So I've known Greg, Nick, and Tim since like 2005, right? That's how far back we go on, like the CWO blog and everything else. So as that's evolved, like they came on board at Place to Be Nation doing comic stuff. And I'll be honest, like I never really listened to the shows. I never read much because it's something I just never got into as a kid. And I think I was just so into wrestling that a lot of other stuff just took it. Like I was so obsessive with it, that and sports, other stuff took a backseat. Like I was into Transformers growing up and then that faded. I never really got in like super into G.I. Joe. I was never into Star Wars. I liked that stuff, but I was never like, I wasn't hardcore into it. Like it was pretty much wrestling and that was it. So I just never got into comics. Like I didn't get it. Like I didn't care. I wasn't interested in even trying it. The most comics I had was the picture Bible that I had. That was the Bible in comic book form that I've read a million times. So like that was the most comics, and that like the random like WDF ones they'd put out. Like I'd read, not the Ultimate Warrior Bondage Sex one, but the other ones. So it was really just periphery for me. Even during the movie boom in the mid 2000s and on, like I'd see the big ones, but I wasn't like, I didn't have to go see them all. Right. So like I saw the, all the Batman from the Batman Begins trilogy. Right. Well, I saw the first two, then I did not see a third one because I got freaked out after the theater shooting and didn't want to go. So I saw the first two.
So were you expecting copycats?
I don't know. I just got turned off. Like not even copycats. Like this, it just kind of sickened me to think about. And I just lost interest in seeing the movie. If that makes sense.
You haven't watched it since?
I had it on DVR, right? Saved on my DVR, and then we got rid of cable, and I never watched it. It was just sitting on my DVR for like 3 years. But at some point, I'll watch it someday. But I don't know what, in the moment, I was all geared up to go. That happened, and it just turned me off. So anyway, my point is, I had seen like movies here and there, but they weren't an appointment for me. And then there's so many of them, I just couldn't keep up. And then I had kids, and like we see like one movie a year at this point. And it's usually like Star Wars, and that's it. And I saw Super Troopers this year. But other than that, it wasn't, and we're not like movie people. Like I don't watch a ton of movies at, like we're more TV show people. So like our nights together, my wife and I, are really usually geared around TV shows more than like putting a movie on. So I can't say like we order many movies. We used to buy a lot of movies. I own a lot of movies, but we haven't in a long time. So it's not like, oh, tonight we're going to watch this. So things started to turn late last year. I was on a flight for work. I think I was going from Salt Lake City to Jacksonville, but I think I was going through Atlanta. So I think this was a Salt Lake to Atlanta leg. And it was a nice plane for once. And they had the TVs right in the back with anything you wanted to choose, you know, a bunch of movies. So I was like, all right, I got like 3 hours to kill. I'm going to put on something that's really going to eat up some time. And I chose Wonder Woman because it was like 2.5 hours. I'd heard it was good.
Ugh.
And you don't like it?
I have a lot of trouble with the writing of it.
All right, so that's fine. See, I didn't care at that point, right?
Yeah.
Like, I didn't care. Like, but like, I enjoyed the movie immensely because it ate up all the time. You know, I thought Gal Gadot, I thought she was like, I'm not even gonna say like she was great acting wise, but I just saw her presence as Wonder Woman was like strong, right? Like it's like she looks like a Wonder Woman to me, and I like war stuff. Like the war part of it really intrigued me. Like that, I liked the tie in with all that. Like I wasn't really up on the mythos of Wonder Woman, like her history and all that. So like that part of it was all interesting to me. So it piqued me a bit. I read a bunch.
When you were watching it,
yeah, was I?
When you were watching it,
yes.
Yeah, well, you were for sure. I know you were.
Yes.
I don't doubt it for a second. But at what point did you clue in that there was something wrong, something iffy with her parentage? Was it the second time they said it, or the 40th time they said it within the first 20 minutes?
Yeah. But at that point, I was just getting acclimated to everything. I'm like, okay, this is like, I was just trying to understand like what was going on, because like, I didn't know her background at all, right? So like to me, I'm just trying to gather like what these people are appearing in the smoke and all this other like I was piecing that all together at this point.
there's something with it. She must never know the truth about her father. How many?
Right,
how
look,
many
I don't want to break down Wonder Woman. I'm trying to take you on my journey of how I got into comics.
Yeah, but I need to talk about Wonder Woman now. But go on, please.
All right, that's fine. We'll do that another time. Anyway,
watching Wonder Woman on a plane, it's awful.
It was not awful. It piqued my interest. So it was like the seed, right? I can't say I dove into comics immediately, but it was the seed that was planted. And then at WrestleMania weekend in New Orleans, I spent a lot of time with folks that proliferate the pop feed that are heavy into comics. And that's Nick Duke, who I mentioned I had known forever, but you know, we had hung out a couple times, but this was like the most hours we had spent together in person. And Todd Weber and Jennifer Smith. So like big comics people. And so we became friendly. We started talking. And as things evolve, of course, you have your own chats on Facebook. You know, it's like we become closer and closer. We're friendlier and friendlier. We're talking more. And they're talking about comics. And now I'm like, okay, I have some investment in these people, right? Before I liked Nick. I liked Greg. Like, I liked those guys. But I didn't kind of have like, okay, like these guys are my dudes now. I'm going to listen to their shit. And Ben, you know, who... You were dying for me to mention.
I'd just like to give him some respect.
Yeah, right. And I should mention that I've known Todd since like 2005 as well. He's in the Greg and Tim bucket. But Ben, like, he wasn't doing comic stuff on Place of Nation. And I didn't care about his shoot work, right? So I loved Ben and like doing his wrestling stuff. I listened to all his rewinds, like stuff like that. But getting to know these people, like, you know, Jennifer and Nick and spending time with Todd, like, you almost become... You want to be more invested in what they're producing as friends and the content they're putting out. So I started listening to Geek and Sassy more. I like listened to a bit in the past. Started listening to I got involved in the Hard Traveling Fanboys, the comic book theater. So like that gave me some tie-in. I started to like understand a little bit through that, even though the Watchmen stuff is so far over my head, I can't even handle it. I have to listen to like 10 minute spurts because I can't follow any of it. And then it's great. That's not a shot of the production. I just don't understand the story.
Because you haven't read the story. That's
exactly.
Why.
So I have no clue. And like, I'm like, everyone's doing voices and like, are these real voices? Are they fake voices? Like I'm just all thrown off. But I'm sure that's what people think.
Yeah, Stu Hart is not in it. He's not involved.
Okay, he's not booked. No. So anyway, I'm rambling quite a bit, but this is where I'm at. So, and then the Marvel Age podcast started, and I'm like, all right, this seems like a cool spot to get in. As I mentioned earlier, I'm a mark for the chronological stuff and like tracking shit from the start. And here we go. This is like right in my wheelhouse. It's four guys I like. Well, three guys and Russell that I like. And they're getting... Just kidding. Four guys I like, and they're starting at the beginning, and this seems like a real cool spot for me to get involved. And I started kind of asking around of people. I'm like, do you have a Marvel Unlimited account? You know, but I'm like, you know what? If I'm going to do this, I'm going to do it. And so I purchased a Marvel Unlimited subscription, and I'm like, and then Ben tells me, why didn't you ask me for it 3 months ago? And I worked at Marvel. I could have gotten it for free. So thanks. But anyway, I'm like, fine. If I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it right. Seems like a good bargain. So I decided I'm going to listen to these shows and follow along and start reading. And so this all kicked off like right after Mania when Marvel Age podcast started. And as part of that, I've been listening to the Masterclass as well. So I'm halfway through episode 3 of Marvel Age, and reading wise, I am into, I think, early 64. I'm in the Fantastic Four. I just read the Fantastic Four Hulk book. That was like the last one I read.
So what titles are you reading? You're reading Fantastic Four? Are you reading Spider-Man?
It's everything that's on. So there's a list that you follow along with that was produced by some Marvel gentleman. I don't know who. The Marvel Age reference spreadsheet that is published in the PlayStation Comics Facebook group. And these are the books that they are walking through on the show. So I'm reading everything that they're talking about on the show. So here's what I've pretty much a snapshot of it. It's Fantastic Four, some Amazing Adult Fantasy, Incredible Hulk, Journey to Mystery, Amazing Spider-Man, Tales of Suspense. Like, you know, there's all stuff in there, right, that eventually becomes their own books, like Thor and shit like that.
Right.
So I am into Fantastic Four 13.
13,
which is early 63. But we're not doing every Fantastic Four. There's only particular ones that are on this list. Like Fantastic Four is like 1, 2, 4, 5. 9, 10, right. 12, 13. Like, it's not every installment. But I'm kind of gleaning in between with the guys on the podcast, because they're adding a lot of color on both podcasts, which is helpful. So like they're kind of filling in the gaps of what's happening in between these other books. And on the first episode, if you're like me and you're trying to get into it, the first episode they did was really good because they gave a history of Marvel to that point, which I had no clue about any of it. So like all that to me was interesting. And so I felt like that podcast has helped me become a comics fan and get more grounded in all of it. And I've enjoyed it. Can I say I'm like a super comic book fan that like diehard? No, but it's like something I do if I have 10 minutes free instead of like wasting time on Twitter. Yeah. I'll say, oh, let me get to the next comic book. And would I have done it without Marvel Unlimited on a digital device? Probably not. Because I think I'd be murdered if I if I started bringing more material into this house. So sort of
spending more money and bringing more things.
Right. So being able to look at it on my phone or my iPad, like 10 minutes here or there, like, all right, dinner's cooking, the kids are playing, I'm going to sit here and just read like one book quick on my phone. Right. So like stuff like that, that's been a big help. And part of me too is kind of preemptively thinking, I have a son, you know, there's a 75% chance he's probably going to like comic books on some level, right? I mean, it's in there. He's going to like superheroes or something. I should probably be knowledgeable, so I'm not the idiot dad who has no clue. So, like, I'm kind of also trying to prep myself to be able to interact and have it be something else we do. Like, I showed him a little bit of it on my phone. He's not following quite yet, but I'm thinking that's something we'll do. So it's kind of
as someone who has a son that's a little older than your son, believe me, very soon you're going to be asked questions like who would win if Hulk fought Thor and like, have the answers because these are important questions he needs to know.
So I had one moment of embarrassment before this all started, and that was last year. He has a Marvel superheroes towel. And he asked me who one of the guys on the towel was, and it was Thor and I didn't know. And I had to ask, I forget who I asked. It was somebody in one of the groups I asked. It might have been Brad or Todd or someone. And I was like, can you confirm for me who this is?
There's a hammer. I guess you're not up on the Norse mythology either, though.
Well, no, so he doesn't have a hammer in the picture. It's like just his head.
Oh, okay.
So I'm like, it's not Wolverine because he kind of looks like Wolverine. You know, it's like, I'm trying to piece together who it is. So like that part of it really shook me up. Like I felt embarrassed as a man to not know. So like I had to go to another man to ask who this comic, or I had to look it up, who this comic book character was. So that was kind of the first seed as well with Wonder Woman.
Was it movie Thor or was it like a comic book?
It's comic book Thor. So like it's like six characters. I can't remember what the fuck is on it, but
it's probably Thor, Captain America, Hulk. It's probably the Avengers that are in the movie now.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
More than anything else. So what you're reading now, are you enjoying it? The reading aspect of it.
I am. And this is where I want to correlate to our wrestling discussion earlier. Because I'm getting into it now. Okay. Like I hear the guys saying stuff that they are nitpicking or hated. And like I'm not really getting that because I'm like, oh, this is all new to me. I don't know what's better. You know what I mean? Like I am the 9-year-old watching Raw right now thinking John Cena, Roman Reigns, and these guys are the best ever. Because this is where I'm getting in. I'm like, oh, this stuff's pretty good. Like, I'm not picking up on the little nitpick stuff that these guys are kind of picking apart. But, and I mean, they're overly positive. I'm not saying they're shitting on everything, but there is stuff they'll nab. Right. And the only stuff I really catch that they complain about is like the overt racism. But to me, I just chalk that up as it's the 60s. You know, it's guys writing the 60s. It's they're going to be racist,
times.
Right? I mean,
Stanley
this is,
being a dick.
Right. It's, you know, Orientals. You know, like that's a thing in the 60s. I mean, like, you know, Chow Chow Ching doing martial art. Like that's just what it is. So it's it's just a product of the times. Now, there is one thing that bugs me, and I've mentioned it to you. And
yes.
That is the really blatant exposition of someone talking out loud in the book. And I don't know if that's a comic book thing. I get that they have to kind of explain the story, but it's like, oh, you know, they didn't see me because I used my magic web that includes super powder and this stuff. Like no one actually talks and says stuff like that, like out loud, you know what I mean? Or like,
yes.
It's like me and you walk in a room and like, there is, you know, Brad, whatever, punching Chad. And I'm like, wow, look at Brad is punching Chad, and I'm glad he is, because if he wasn't, then I would be punching him with my fist using my arm. You know, it's like this exposition of like everything having to be spelled out, because I get that they can't really tell a story maybe in cartoon. So it doesn't bog me enough to turn me off to it, but it's like my one pet peeve right now.
I think that has so much to do with it being a new medium when they were writing it.
Right.
Like now you wouldn't see that because you take it for granted. You know what it is to read a comic book. You know what it is. Like, you can put together things a bit easier. But back then, these were kind of – I mean, there were comic books before, but these were kind of the first like really big superhero stories, right? So then they really wanted to get the concepts across. Like, you pick up a Spider-Man comic now – and you won't find any of that. Like, right. you'll see. There's just a different social contract with it now. I won't go into great lengths, but I'm a pretty big comic guy. Like, I don't do a ton for the site on comics, but I've been reading comics my whole life and got a pretty decent sized collection. And like to think that I worked in a comic book store for a while, so I became that asshole. I recently tried to go back and read these comics you're talking about, and I had the hardest time. Like, because I'm on board with you. I want to know, because some of these books like Spider-Man and X-Men and Fantastic Four, like these books, you pick them up now and they have these like decades of continuity. And I wanted to read through it kind of like how you are, like, and get all the nuances and stuff. And I found them almost unreadable at certain points.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying that to shit on them. Like, I obviously appreciate how important they were and how good they were. But I think, and I might say this might sound outlandish, but I get the impression that I don't enjoy Stan Lee as a writer.
Right.
I really love him as an ideas man, and he's brilliant, and we have all these things because of him. But I'm not so sure I enjoy the dialogue and the way he tells stories, because some of his stories are still absolutely iconic and wonderful. But the way he tells them for me, I have trouble with, and I'm very curious to see how long you stick with it, because like I tried to reread the X-Men and I lasted 20 issues before I just couldn't anymore.
Right.
Like Professor Letch was like the worst of all. Like, there's just such a strange. They're going in so many strange directions, and I just had trouble with it. And I'd be curious to see you read something new. And then see the contrast. I think that would be fascinating.
Like, yeah, I think what's helping me too is this reading list. I assume is leaving some of the like real worthless stuff behind. Like, I think they're putting some bad stuff that they felt was like important to the chronology. Like the standalone Hulk, I know was like kind of not received well, but it's in there because it's important, right? But I think a lot of like, if I was reading every issue of all of these books, I'd probably start to check out as well. But I'm guessing because of the cherry picking, I think is helping. I'm also glad that this came around, because when I first got the app, I started to like just look at for like random stuff. I'm like, oh, maybe I'll just start this random. But it is, I mean,
it's hard.
You think wrestling or whatever else is overwhelming? I mean, when I look at that app, I'm like, holy fucking shit! And like, there's no easy way to understand the chronology of it. There's like a million fucking Spider-Man titles. There's a million this. There's a million. So it's like, I don't even know where to start. You know, it's like,
yeah.
So that's why this was kind of a godsend, because I'm like, okay, I finally have an entry point that I can follow along with. And not only can I follow this list and read these things, I can listen to, you know, experts break it down immediately after to help me understand it, or even before, like on some of these, I've been listening to the show before I get to the reading, which is fine. Cause this, you know, I haven't gotten much, like, there's maybe been two stories that I've read so far that have, like, shocked me. You know what I mean? Like, you can kind of see most of the stuff coming, but I think it's more about the journey than the, at least that I've noticed for some of the stuff early on. It's like, I'm not getting, like, big swerves and twists at this point. So I don't mind listening. And there's so much going on those shows, and they're pretty good about not outright spoiling everything. So I think that has helped me a lot, having like that to listen to along with this reading list to keep me on track and understand like where to go, versus like just if I had gotten dumped into the wild on this app, I probably just would have thrown in the towel, is my guess.
Yeah, it's very difficult. Like, and even now, like I went to buy some new comics lately, and I just couldn't figure out where to jump in. Like, it's almost impossible. Like, and every year lately they're rebooting everything every year or two, and it's just, but even then it's still confusing. Like the comics world becomes this thing that's like you something that every kid is into, but then how do you jump into it? And I see the value in jumping in from the beginning. I just like I worry that some people would do that and not enjoy comic books as a result because of like
yeah
what the writing is and whatnot. And again, I'm not trying to shit on it because I love those stories in a lot of ways.
I think you just need the mind. Like, I think your mindset has to be calibrated. Like I'm confident that comics get good. I mean, there's too much talk right. about it. There's too much out there. Like all these, like I know it's going to get good. So like, if you're okay with enjoying the path and knowing it gets better, like I'm not going in thinking, oh, I hope this gets better. You know, so, like I know it's going to
right,
get
right.
So
but
I
you just. Except so long though before it does, like not that the stories aren't good again, but right. like I mean, comics really changed in the '80s with the advent of Watchmen, with the advent mm-hmm. of the Dark Knight Returns. These were books that shocked the comic world because they were so new and different, and everything kind of got inspired by them. And that's when long term storylines changed in a lot of ways. And not that Spider-Man don't have, but saying they've cut out a lot of the stuff in between, and that's where you end up getting lost.
Right. Yeah. I mean, we'll see. I mean, to this point, I'm definitely enjoying it. I can't say like I wake up and it's the first thing I do, or I'm dying to read it. Like I just get so much going on that I'm trying to fit in, you know, like
right.
podcast prep. And I, you know, we're going to talk about probably in a little bit. I've mentioned on shows before. I watch Breaking Bad. I'm doing Better Call Saul now. We'll talk about that. But, I bought this mm-hmm. Breaking Bad book that by Alan Sepinwall that it's like his reviews of every episode, and it's like a really good book. And I'm trying to make traction on it. I just finally got to season two because we were away for a few days, and I made it a point to like, all right, I'm just going to sit here and read at night. But like, I want to do that, you know, and I want to get back. I want to read more of these comics. So it's like fitting all this in.
It's hard.
Yeah. But so that speaks to the point of that. Like, it's not like it hasn't become like number one priority to me.
Right.
It's now just kind of a thing I work in. Where I can. I'm cooking on the grill. I'm sitting there waiting. I'm going to read a comic. You know, it's like just doing stuff where I can to fit stuff in. So,
yeah. And I'm interested to see how you like it and where it goes and what stories latch, which ones don't. Mm-hmm. So I think it'll be a fun journey for you. Like I would love to see your reaction. I'd love to see you compare it to something new and see kind of to right. see like what that elicits out of you.
Yeah. All right. I'll try it. I am looking forward to getting into like more of the Thor stuff. I actually do really like mythology, Greek and Norse. So I'm interested to see where that goes. Like the idea of that, I like the Viking stuff, Norse stuff. Like
right.
like that stuff was always interested me. I can't say I'm like super well versed in it. You know, I did take like mythology classes in college and stuff. But so like that part of it, reading about that, like I am interested in Thor. Like I know already after the couple I've read, like that'll be. Probably one of my more favorite stuff. And there's been other stuff too that I'm kind of like, yeah. But I have enjoyed Fantastic Four.
If you're interested
Four.
In mythology.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, Fantastic Four is a weird book because like, I mean, they're arguably one of the most important characters in all of Marvel, but I've never really loved their book. But I love them when they're telling a story that involves the whole kind of world.
Mm-hmm.
Find they're such interesting and important pieces in a group piece, but on their own, I mean, you have some classic stories here and there, but on their own, I have such trouble getting into them. And I think that, I mean, the movies too are also awful, but I'd really like to read a riveting Fantastic Four series on their own. I just haven't found it yet.
I will say, I didn't realize too, one thing I've enjoyed that I didn't realize is the, like that the universe was so integrated out of the gate. Like I thought this was more like a recent thing, and like everything was always kept separate. Like I didn't realize how much like tied together this
right.
early. You know, like how much crossover there was, that they all resided pretty much in the same world. That I was not aware of. So that I've enjoyed.
Well, and, Stan Lee is writing them all, right?
I don't know. I don't even look at right. Like I'm gone. I can't. I'm not right. at that point yet. Like, I'm just trying to understand.
It's possible
the books.
I'm wrong.
Like I'm not focusing on like the writer and the you know they'll mention it on the show, but
right.
You know, that's the extent at this point. It's funny you mentioned Fantastic Four because that's one of the few comic book movies I had seen was The Silver Surfer early on in the theater. I saw that one.
Why? Well, I you know what? I saw in the theater too, so I can't say why.
It was like pre-kids. We were looking for something to do. I'm just like, oh, let's go see it. Whatever. I think it was like – it was kind of hyped at the time, right? Like when it first came out? Oh, it was about to come out. I feel like I saw it really early.
I might get lambasted for this, but that's pretty one of the biggest Fantastic Four stories.
Right.
Is Silver Surfer, Galactus, and so I mean when you found out they were doing that, it was like, oh wow, like maybe I didn't love the first movie, but like now they're gonna tell this really cool story that's so iconic and so wonderful. And then they just changed it to a point that made
sense.
I didn't even see the first movie.
I don't know what compelled me to see that second movie, but I feel I must have read something, some hype about it somewhere, and it was just like, oh, let's go. You know, we're going out, let's go see it. So I don't know.
You're like, there's a naked silver dude on a surfboard.
How can I turn that down?
No, you can't. You can't turn that down. You can't. But what a journey you're on.
I'm excited.
What a journey to mystery. Yeah. Yeah. And I just wanted to add, I read a great mythology book last year. It's by Neil Gaiman. Mm-hmm. It's called Norse Gods. And it was quick read, but if you're into mythology, and anybody out there, Neil Gaiman, I mean, for comics fans, he's quite godly in a lot of ways of himself. He wrote Sandman, which is my favorite comic series, but I mean, it's pretty well lauded. And he wrote a book of Norse mythology, and it's just kind of like a modern voice going through these Norse tales, which was just awesome. I read it in maybe like a day or two, and wonderful. I know we got out of comics, but
no, it's fine. Yeah, maybe once I finish this Breaking Bad book, I'll move into that in 2020. Yeah. All right, so yeah, I think that's it for Fall 3. Before we wrap up with our sudden death, we'll explain that in a minute, wanted to really quickly talk about PlayStation.com because we've kind of jump-started the site, Aaron. We've got a lot of stuff pumping out over the past couple weeks, and we're only going to see more of it. One of my favorite pieces to publish every week is Scott Grimes' WWE TV Snapshot. It's a cool way to review the week in TV, and it kind of speaks to what we were talking about earlier. Instead of reviewing the full show and doing play-by-play, which I think is just played out when it comes to the current product, again, speaks to my thoughts of, you know, individual minutes don't matter on these shows. Scott does a nice job. He watches Raw, SmackDown, and NXT. And what he does is just kind of gives the highlights of all three, like match of the week, segment of the week, MVP of the week, you know, stuff like that. And it's a really quick read, and it gives you the highs and lows of the week of WWE. So I think it's a good piece, and I appreciate Scott taking the time to put that together, and he does a really good job.
Yeah, I love what I've read so far.
Neil Trauma had a new piece today talking about the details behind Toy Story Land opening at Walt Disney World. Check that out. We've been talking a lot about Marvel Age. They dropped the new episode looking at 1965 Part 1. And, of course, check out the most recent Master's Class with Ben Morris as well. And that was with Todd, I believe, was in the most recent one, looking at 64 Part 2. Songs with Friends is another new podcast on the Pop feed. Steve Williams and Kelly, you know, it gets emo at times, but it's a good show. They look at a couple of songs and kind of break down the lyrics and the meaning behind the songs, and they're really good at it. So I recommend taking a look at that. And again, one of the written pieces I wanted to mention last week was the written debut of my co-host on Jeff Learns Wrestling, Jeff Machado. The first written installment of PTBN Learns Jeff. So I enjoyed this. I don't know if you get to read it yet, Aaron, but maybe you should, with your recent interactions. It's a good look into the mind of Jeff and the way he thinks and what's been going on recently in his life, which he did cover on a couple episodes ago on Jeff Learns Wrestling. But if you like kind of, you know, introspective pieces and just kind of the way, you know, he maybe – if you like on the podcast, you'll like the written piece. So check it out, I guess is what I'm trying to say. As far as audio goes, we got plenty of that, of course. For me – last week we had a new Place to Be podcast. We did WrestleMania 4 with John D'Amato, and we have a new episode coming up this next week. Kelly Nelson returns to look at the latest MSG, I think from April of 88. A new Wrestling War Zone should be coming as well this weekend. Chad and I looking at October 16th, 95 week of TV. We did October 9th, so check that out. And Jeff Orange Wrestling will be back at some point too. So that's kind of what's going on with me. Anything else you want to talk about before we move on?
No, I think you covered that well. So let's hit this sudden death.
Oh, by the way, Seinfeld returned, our rewatch series. We're going to finish, baby.
That we work on together.
Yes, we work on it together, and we're in season 9. We did The Blood, episode 4. So we're going to finish what we started.
Which I hated.
I know.
I hated it.
But we're going to get through this. It looked like we were going to abandon it in season 9, which would have been a travesty. We're not going to.
So stupid.
I also wanted to talk about, with the passing of Vader, we were able to get Kevin Kelly to hop on for a quick pod blast. Me and him went about 25 minutes talking about Vader's career. Kevin told some stories about, you know, knowing Vader, working with Vader. So it was a real quick listen, but it was a nice tribute to the great Leon White. So be sure to check that out.
It was time.
It's awful. All right. So sudden death. Should we talk about that?
Yeah, so sudden death, what we decided was we
that's
were
an
going
awful
to...
segue from Vader, by the way, to sudden death. But go ahead.
God damn it. We decided that in every episode, we're going to do a top five list. And we came up with ours for this week. But I think something we talked about before we went on was if anybody listening, if anybody is actually listening, if you have a suggestion for us to do a top five on, please write us on any of the group pages, wherever this is. And we might not get to everyone, but at least it'll keep us clicking and we'll get an idea of what you guys want to hear too.
Yeah, that. And when you want to, you know, once you hear ours, submit your own top five as well. Maybe we'll try and read some in the next episode. Tell us ours are dumb or ours are great and then share yours. So, but definitely give us topics too. We'll backlog them and we'll go through them as we move through.
But I tell you, if you tell us our lists are dumb, we are going to tell you your lists are dumb, right? Just understand that that is the social contract we are entering into.
We'll probably say your face is dumb too.
Oh yeah, and you're nuts.
Oh, you're a nut, however it may be.
Did you know you can get your nuts like twisted?
Yeah, it's called testicular torsion.
Isn't that the scariest thing in the world?
Yeah. So you want to hear a funny story about that real quick? It's not me. We were at Foxwoods Casino one night, and we were having dinner. It was me and my buddy Don, and maybe it might have been Jeff, and or Andy Flanagan. I don't know. There's like three or four of us, and we're at dinner. And this waitress is like just being really like talkative and really nice. And she told us a story that her son had recently had an issue with testicular torsion. She talked about it, and I was like cringing as she's talking about it because it's like frightening to even think about your balls getting twisted around. But it is a medical condition that I did know something about. So,
why would a mother talk to a group of strangers about her son's nuts being tied up?
I think I ended up having Don like leave his number for her too. I talked him into it because she seemed like pretty open and talkative. So I don't think it went anywhere.
Wait, like to date her?
Yeah, she was single.
Oh, but then you got to take care of the son with the twisted nutsack.
Yeah, you know. I didn't say you had to marry her and bang her, you know.
Yeah, but you got to, at the very least, get him out of the house, like in that Curb Enthusiasm episode.
True. Or like 40-year-old virgin.
Right. Either way, I hope that kid is better. I hope your friend Don banged this waitress. I hope it all went well for everyone.
Right. Ended on a good note. All right, so tonight's sudden death topic... we're going to stay in the pop culture realm, and that is ranking our favorite TV dramas. So we'll do top five, and we're not going to linger too long, we say. So I am not a huge drama guy. I think we've talked about this pretty in depth.
But why did you say yes to doing the dramas then?
Because it's interesting to me. Because comedies, I could do a top 100. Love sitcoms, and I love comedies. But dramas, I'm starting to gain like more grounding in. You know, and it, like I'm trying to get stronger. Like I'm kind of a pussy with stuff. Like I don't like horror movies at all. I don't like anything gory. And you know, famously on the Halloween episode of Place to Be podcast, I asked if Stranger Things was too scary for me to watch, and it wasn't. I watched it and survived. And then I transitioned to Breaking Bad, which I had always put off because I didn't like gratuitous violence, and you know, wasn't what I thought it was going to be. So anyway, I'm getting better with the dramas, and I do have five to talk about. I have a feeling they'll be different from your five, but I wanted to cover it because it was something different than I would normally talk about. But I'm setting the record to say I'm not deep on the drama genre.
But I also think it's good that our five are different because at the very least we'll have these some perspectives, and if we turn some people on to some different shows, that'd be great.
Yep. All right, you want to give your number five?
Sure. Okay, so my number five is a very divisive show, but almost entirely because of the way it ended. And that show is the Michael C. Hall vehicle, Dexter. You ever watch Dexter?
No, it's too scary.
Well, for those of you who haven't seen, Dexter is a a serial killer that focuses on other serial killers. And I would say for the first four seasons, the show was – it might have been my number one had it ended after four. And then the other seasons I liked as well. They were fun to watch, but
– How many were there?
Yeah, they ended eight oh, seasons. Wow. Okay. So you can see that it kind of – it overstayed its welcome a little bit. But that being said, there was always enough good things in it that – I mean, to me – like when I say I'm scared watching a show, it's not because I'm scared of what's happening. It's because I'm scared for the characters.
Right.
Like you fall in love with this character, Dexter, and like, and for the, its entirety, when I would watch it, I would be terrified for him. He's going to get caught. This is going to happen. Oh my God. Like I'm on board. It is pretty bloody and gross, but that's not really the appeal of the show. The appeal of the show is more, the psychological aspects, and then the guest stars are awesome. So I'm sure that'll cause some division among the people listening, but I'm comfortable putting Dexter at my number five.
Yeah, I'll never watch that because of the blood.
it's you can like fast forward that scene. You know, I knew a girl. I know her. I know a girl who, when she was a kid, her parents they would show her movies, but they would edit out all the violence or sad things.
Okay.
And she's a fucking mess to this day.
Right.
Like she doesn't know what things are. If someone ends up talking about sex, she'll plug her ears. And this is like a 40-year-old woman.
Oh, that's real fucked up.
Yeah, it's fucked up. But like imagine not knowing why Bambi's alone. Like,
right.
Like every movie had that stuff missing.
Oh, yeah. That's next level. That's beyond me. I don't like it. All right. My number five is probably the exact dichotomy of your show that you mentioned. That's Parenthood, which was, I thought, phenomenal writing, phenomenal acting. It was such a deep cast. I was into it early because I'm a big Craig T. Nelson fan, but it went even beyond him. I just thought the storylines and the storytelling, you know, there's one blip where they get off track. Did you watch the show?
Nope.
Okay. So there's was he
a coach on the show?
No, sadly he was not. By the way, Coach was supposed to get rebooted and they never did, and now Luther died, so I hope they can live with themselves.
We're just a tweet away from Craig T. Nelson being exposed to some kind of bigot, probably.
He's like big into baseball in the show. Like he teaches his kids about it and stuff. So I guess he's kind of coaching them. But anyway, there's like there's a little bit of wonkiness around like one of the families, like monetary situation. Like there's one season where like he loses his job and they're kind of broke, but by the next season, like they're sending their daughter to college and they have like, they're living in like fucking Berkeley or something. You know what I mean? Like, you have to kind of make that leap, but, the writing is phenomenal. If you're a Friday Night Lights fan, which is a show we'll be talking about soon, there's a ton of crossover too, cause it's the same creator. So like a lot of the people that were in Friday Night Lights show up in Parenthood. Michael B. Jordan has like a great run in Parenthood.
Are they the same characters or are
different characters. Yeah, different characters. But the actors, worlds are like, not
colliding?
Oh, huh?
Worlds are not colliding?
No, they don't. There's some like fan theories out there that try and connect them, which is funny.
Right.
But no, overall they're not. They give the actors the work. But anyway, I just thought it was a really good family drama. There's some humor mixed in. It was never heavy handed, and I had this argument with my wife who contends that This Is Us is better than Parenthood. And I'm fine with This Is Us, but to me, Parenthood is much better because it didn't rely on the shock value. Like, This Is Us is much more soapy. Like, every episode is a big twist or swerve or turn. Parenthood was very much more grounded and kind of slower moving and didn't rely on, like, these big bang twists. It was more like they kind of earned their moments. The character development we saw, you know, with the characters was really strong. And, like, they have an autistic child in there. Max was the kid's name, and like he was really, really good, and they treated the autism stuff with like great respect in the way they presented him. I thought it was really well done. So like just a lot of stuff they touched on and the way they went about it was just I just thought it was a really good show. And I was sad when it got canceled. I know Craig T. Nelson was mad that, all right, well, spoiler, you can plug your ears too. Are you ever gonna watch it?
No.
Okay.
All I know is my wife used to call it her crying show.
It was her crying. It should be. Anyway, so he obviously dies like at the very end.
Oh!
So he I mean, it's not a surprise if you watch the show, but
how are they going to bring him back for Coach if he's dead?
Right. But he was upset because they were kind of hoping maybe the show would get revived if Riverdale comes back. And he was like kind of pissed that they killed him off because he didn't think they needed to. And you could argue they didn't need to show him because it's almost like at the very end. So anyway, all that said, Parenthood's awesome. You should watch it if you haven't, even though I just ruined the end for you.
You just ruined the fucking show for me. Why am I going to watch it now? I know the main character.
All right. My number four.
Oh, you're going into your four. All right.
Yeah, we'll go back and forth like we did for making the cut.
All right, I like it.
My number four, which is now very different, is back to the soapy feel. That was the first drama I loved growing up, and I stand
Days
by
of Our
it.
Lives. Is it Days of Our Lives?
It is Beverly Hills 90210. diehard fan growing up. I want to say started like pretty. I don't think I watched the first season. I want to say maybe season. The one right after the beach, I don't know if it's technically season three or whatever, is when I started. But I watched right through to the end. I am a pretty knowledgeable 90210 fan. I've watched a ton of the reruns. I'm one of the original 90210 bros from the Blog of Doom, CWO, with Andy Helene and Tim. And I'm probably missing a couple others in there. But we were the official 90210 bros. Yeah, I mean, I could probably go through, hang with anyone, just about anyone when it comes to 90210 trivia. Watched it every week, occasionally with my mom, which looking back was probably kind of weird. I think as I got older, I'd go watch it upstairs while she watched it downstairs. Just because, you know, as I'm like sitting there, like just lusting over Jenny Garth, I didn't want to be sitting next to my mom. But the, again, I, you know, of course it's absurd. Of course it's ridiculous. You know, Andrea's 45 playing 19, but whatever. It was fucking great. Especially
Jason
early.
Priestley's like 60, so like,
right. But he's fucking, you know, Brandon Walsh, man. You got, you know, Daddy Walsh, Jim Walsh is great. So, you know, there's a lot going on. There's just as much camp as there is real value to that show. And there's just so much of it that I love it. My guilty pleasure.
Guilty pleasure. No, I used to watch it as well. It's not on my list, but I used to watch it as well. And I had a cousin that used to live with us. He was an older cousin. He was going to university while I was in high school. And he would just mock the shit out of me for watching this show. And he would also constantly call me fat and talk about how
cousin.
Fat I was.
Nice
he
cousin.
Was a fucking prick, a prick cousin. Where is I going with this? Yeah. So like I still struggle with body image because of this guy. Like he just ruined it. And he ruined that show. Like,
well, I hope I can allow you to have the love for that show. I had a female cousin that was a diehard that we used to talk all the time, and she embraced my love of 90210.
I was never that fat. Like, I could lose some weight, but not fat, you know? And anyway, so you were lusting after Jenny Garth. I was lusting after Shannon Doherty.
Yeah.
That was my – but also, too, I went to school with a family called the Walshes, which was fucking weird.
Yeah.
Because I didn't want two Walshes. It bothered me a lot. But, yeah, I'm more of a Shannon Doherty person than a Jenny Garth.
Awful. Awful
What
take.
About Tara Spelling? Where does she land on your lust list?
Yeah. It depends on the episode, is Donna. Like, there's some where she's higher, some where she's lower. But it's – I mean, the 90210 list starts and stops with Kelly and Valerie, and like that's it. Like that, I mean, that's it for me. It's those two, and then Cody Lyon. And
Valerie is Tiffany Amber Thiessen.
Oh yes.
Okay. Yeah, I can get on board with that.
Peak. You know, there's some that come and go to Rebecca Gayhart, the Noxzema girl. she was Dylan's fiance. She of course was strong. And then who the fuck comes in at the end? What's her name? Anyway, there's a couple that come in those like last couple seasons that you know when it's pretty much just Steve. Steve in the new class is pretty much what
did
it
you
is.
Have a problem with Steve's hair? I never enjoyed Steve's hair. It
it's
didn't
real
look
weird.
Like real hair.
I don't think I've ever seen anyone with that hair besides him and Dolph Ziggler.
No.
I guess.
But Steve wasn't here to show the world anything.
No. Okay, what's your number four?
All right. My number four is a show that I watched really late, way after it came out, but I didn't get it spoiled for whatever reason. And it was a show that it's still one of the few shows where months after I watched it, I was still upset by it. There were still elements of it that I was just like, wow, like it's awful and deep and it's true. And it's the show is The Wire.
Okay.
The Wire for me, I almost went into it being it was too overrated, because it's one of those shows that people will often put atop these lists as the greatest drama of all time.
Right.
And it's a show I tried to watch a couple times, and then I'd get through the first season and then not really get into the second season. But then when I finally sat down to watch the whole thing, I don't think I've ever been as moved by the ideas presented in a show more than with The Wire. It doesn't have the big – I mean, it has some big shocking moments and nice twists, but that's not really what it's about. It's more about kind of sitting there and slowly leaning into the world and seeing how shitty the world is. And it's a show I'd recommend to anyone. I would tough it out after the first – the first season's great. It's more the second season where it's not quite the best, but it's still very – it's still compelling. So The Wire for me was just a really beautiful show. And it also starred a lot of actors that I had seen in other shows too that we'll talk about going forward. You haven't watched The Wire, eh?
I have not, no.
That's one I think you could do, because there's not really gore. And there's not really gratuitous violence. There is violence, but that's not the crux of the show. The crux is really about – it's all about all the systems at play in Baltimore and how it kind of works together and how people get wrapped up in it and how people get in or out of it. It paints a bleak picture, but it's a really interesting bleak picture.
Very good.
Yeah, so watch The Wire.
All right, what's your number three?
My number three, I mean, we're sticking in the realm of Crime and Punishment here. My number three is Oz, HBO's first drama. I'm sure you haven't watched Oz.
Definitely not.
Yeah, definitely not. Are you like, have you watched Arrested Development?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So are you like George Michael, like when he thinks he's watching The Wizard of Oz, he watches Oz?
Oh, God, Oz would that is so be scary.
On your bed with the blanket over your head.
I fucking hated Oz. I did see Oz and I fucking hated it so much. TikTok,
really?
And all that shit.
TikTok? What are you talking about?
Return to Oz.
Oh. Okay. So we know where your fear level is. So we're watching the garbage on purpose.
It's late.
Yep. Look, Oz is great. It's an amazing ensemble drama. You'll get to see a lot of your favorite actors today in some of their early roles. J.K. Simmons is wonderful as a horrible Nazi. There's a
Glenda,
lot of
Glenda the Good Witch.
There's Glenda the Good Witch. There's the Cowardly Lion, which is his name is Tobias Beecher in the show Oz. It was the first HBO drama I ever watched, and it changed the way I looked at television and really made my standards completely shift. And it's because of shows like Oz that I have trouble going back to network shows, mm-hmm. where stories are told over a 24-episode arc as opposed to a short, concise 12. So if you're into something different and you're willing to look past the horrible rape and often horrible dismemberments, check out Oz.
All right, my number three, when I first saw the promo – and it was a brief one. It was like a 5-second sleet. Many years ago, I knew it was a show I needed to watch, because many people here by space should know I have an affinity for Russia and Russian things. And so when I first saw that little slate for the Americans with the Russian flag and knowing it was like 1980s Russia, I was all fucking in. And that show was about as rewarding a journey as it gets in the most bleakest, like saddest way. And I want to tread carefully, because I don't want to spoil this one, because I know there are people that probably haven't.
I might watch this one.
Yeah. And it's new. Like, the finale just occurred like a month ago. So like, I don't want to jump, but it's not for everyone. I understand. I know people have tried it and couldn't follow, because it does move slow, but when it ramps like fast and hard. And the journey itself is, you learn quickly that it's not a spy show. It's a family show. Like, and if you keep that perspective, I think it works a lot more on many different levels. And the acting is just fantastic. I mean, Kerry Russell obviously is tremendous, and the rest of the cast as well is really well built. And they captured like 1980s America, Russia so well, just like just kind of the dark bleakness at times and the fear over the Cold War. And you think to yourself, like, wow, was like this much actually happening? Like this many people were dying for just no, you know, stupid reasons. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. But like, that's just what it was. It's such almost like a senseless time when you look at it. But the tensions were real hot and heavy. So again, I'm trying not to spoil because it's again, pretty fresh. But to me, if you're into like anything like period piece like that, and the acting is so good. Just it's worth the ride if you stay with it.
Yeah, I've been meaning to give that one a try.
Do it. After you finish all the other things I have on your list, like Seinfeld and Better Call Saul. And
I know, there's a lot of that.
Other things.
Number two.
So my number two is a show I just finished that we talk about often that we've argued about recently with other friends. And that's Breaking Bad.
It's my number two also.
Okay, perfect. So we can talk about it. So... you know, obviously I just binged it since like last fall and it's my number two of all time. But again, I'm not very deep on the dramas, but it's obviously an excellent show. Whether you believe the characters are great or not, it was a wild ride. Like there weren't too many episodes that I was like, oh, you know, I'm kind of ready to move or I'm done. You know, little bits here and there, like early on some of the family stuff, but I think you have to get through that for it to matter later. Or it's, I don't think some of that shit doesn't mean nearly as much later if you don't suffer through some of the family shit early on. But when things really get going, especially the season with Gus and all that, was just tremendous. I'm all in. I'm reading that book. Like I think about it daily still, all of it. So yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's awesome. I'm sure we're going to talk about it at a later time. I will say this, I will offer this theory that I probably won't offer on anything else because which is our, I think Breaking Bad is a modern day retelling of Macbeth, and I'm a Shakespearean actor by trade, and I think the way they've woven that story of this guy who falls from grace is just almost flawless, and Bryan Cranston deserves all the credit in the world for that show being what it is. It's a tremendous, everything about it's tremendous. And I talked earlier about shows where you're scared for the character, like. I wonder, because you knew how many seasons there were, if that kind of went away, because watching it live...
Like, right, you he just could die at any point or anything could happen at any point.
Yeah. He'd get caught, you know, like, there's a lot that could happen. So I'm curious is that if that affected your journey on the viewing. But
well, no, because I didn't know at the end. I mean, whatever. It's not a spoiler at this point. Like, I didn't know... If he was going to live or die, right? So, like, to me, and I stayed spoiler-free somehow. Like, I didn't – the only thing I got spoiled on, and it was by Alan fucking Sepinwall, but it was kind of my own fault. I read his Americans thing, and he compared something that happens in that to Hank finding out about Walt.
Oh, you had that spoiled?
But I was literally, like, two episodes away. Like, I was – so, like, it was coming, so, like – and I kind of figured it, but, yeah, he
that's
said –
That's even worse.
I know.
Because if you had found that out like in episode one, then you'd be the whole time like, oh my God, when's it going to happen, right?
Right. Yeah, so, but I kind of figured he was going to. I'm like, they're not going to let Hank fucking hang around this long. And at this point, he doesn't fucking find out. I mean, you had to figure that's where it was leading. Now, I didn't know if Hank was going to live or die. I just knew that he found out because he compared something that happens in Americans to, you know, Hank discovering that. So like, oh, you know, I was reading the Americans review and he put it in there.
And you had the advantage too of seeing Hank find out. And getting to watch right away. Because for those of us who watched it live, the last shot of that episode is him finding out, and then we wait a year.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that was a big thing for me. Is that I think I even mentioned that to you and Jeff and Josh Fritcher. It was kind of my, you know, guys I talked to about the show as I went through it. Like, I don't know how you guys lived, like, and survived, like, with those breaks. Like, for me, I could barely make it a day, and... We talked about it as a joke, but it was my gym show, and I refused to watch it anywhere else but the gym or a flight. So, like, I had a flight to Arizona where I banged out, like, five each way. So, I would put myself through the torture just a little bit, but I don't know how you guys went, like, years or even week without continuing. For me, I could just go. And I actually ended up doing it almost like a movie because, I'd work out for longer than the episode, so I just kind of roll into the next one. So I'd stop sometimes – 20 minutes into an episode and then pick up the next one. And so it almost became just like kind of a running. And I think the way the show is structured, you can do it that way because it's almost just like one long episode. Like they're not really, it's not really episodic in a way. It's just, it's the whole thing is one long story. So,
I found, because you were doing it and we were talking about it, I found it frustrating because I was like, how do I word this question
right.
without spoiling? I have no clue where you are, but I want to know. And that was fun about you watching it, is getting to see the fresh reactions from you on it.
Right.
Because when going through that, it was like this amazing journey. And it's cool to see somebody else on it, right?
And that's what Jeff kept saying. He's like, oh, I'm so jealous that you're getting to do this again. You know, like, they, you know, you or him or whoever else can never really, now me, can never really go back and relive it that same way
no.
as I got to there. But yeah, and then even like the end, like where, you know, Gus's final act, even to that, like, that's such a good scene because you still, you know, they did it so well. We're like, oh my God, did he actually survive this? You know,
like, oh, yeah, for like that second,
right? The framing of that second is like amazing. You know, and it's, again, I think, you know, Jeff had talked about too, I think it, one of the biggest takeaways is the consequence of every tiny decision all, you know, leads to so much chaos in every moment. Every decision Walt makes leads to something,